Hello, Hanson fans. It's me, Megan, your very dedicated Hanson Hour host, Hanson Hour podcast host. It has been really quiet of late. There's been so much going on. I feel like that is true for everybody. And isn't that awesome that we're so busy and living life to the fullest? So this week's episode is a really fun one. You would have heard me on Instagram toting that I am wrapping up the middle of nowhere era. Sadly, I feel like though there might be a special bonus episode perhaps at the end of these roundups. So stay tuned for that. But at the moment, I am wrapping up each episode one, like four at a time, through all of the season, just to rehash, revisit, get everyone's opinions. It was really spurred on by my husband, who connects up like his gaming podcasts to my car. And then when I get in my car, they're on, like, you know, as a leftover from him. But a lot of gaming podcasts are like groups of people coming together to talk about particular games that have come out. And I really love the flow of the conversation and the commentary that they can have about a particular topic. So that really gave me the idea to do that for these episodes, which is why it's structured a little bit differently. So I have beautiful guests with me. I have Chris and Katie, who have been on the podcast before. I'm obviously in Australia. Chris was in the UK and Katie is in the States. So we all had really bizarre time zones and had sort of come from different pockets. And Katie had a really busy day at work and she had jumped on. It was quite late in the UK for Chris and for me. I had to set my alarm and get up. And so we were all a little bit discombobulated. But I'm really proud of the way that we could all come in together to get this done. And I'm also really proud of the conversation that stemmed from these episodes. You'll hear like a lot of really raw discussion, which I think you wouldn't always expect from a Hanson podcast, but what I'm learning more and more and what I think we're experiencing as a group together as we listen and move through this is that it's more than just the music. There's so much social commentary, so much unpacking, so much about, femininity and all these other things that come into our experience. And I think that's what makes even, you know, to go outside of Hanson, you know, art, right? Like art and music and things that move you and rock you and I suppose shape you to your very core, as some of these things that music can deliver to us. So it's more than just a band, it's more than Hanson. We're having these, you know, beautiful discussions and learning so much and having so much reflection through listening to these podcasts. And I think that will continue as the eras move on and we sort of are all together unpacking the era of our life at that point and our age at that point and where we were at that point. And that's been a really beautiful experience to have with everybody as well. People that have been on the podcast and also everyone listening to the podcast and sort of feeding back their experiences. With that said, I have invited everyone to leave voice notes for the next four episodes. So that would be episode 5, 6, 7, and 8. If you wanted to listen back to those episodes and leave a voice note that I can include in the discussion for the next roundup, I would love that. I haven't got any yet. I'll just be honest. Nobody sent me a voice message. So I would love it if you wanted to contribute in that way, everybody is always welcome. Anyway, I will let you go, and I'll let you listen in on this episode, and I would really love to hear your feedback and let me know how this episode hit for you, because it's a really interesting discussion. All right, lots of love. Hello, welcome to this very special bumper episode. It's episode 17. It's me, Megan, and I have two amazing hosts with me today. I have Chris and Katie, who have both been on the pod before, and we have all got together to have a little rundown of the first four episodes of season one, which of course has been the middle of nowhere era, and I am so thankful for my guests for being able to show up today. We all worked out our time zonings because we're all on different time zones, and we have been able to make it work. So hello, if you wanted to give a quick hello and a thank you.
No.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm happy to be here again.
Katie and Chris. And Chris has been to some of the shows that are happening in the UK at the moment with Busted, and we've just spent the better part of half an hour dissecting them. And her meet and greet, she was lucky enough to get. So let's just jump into it. Episode one of this season was, of course, Katie, who we have with us today from Hanson Stage. And I just want to say, this still tracks, when I look at my analytics, as the most popular show, still after all this time, after all these guests, it's still the most popular show and the most downloaded to and the most listened to. So congrats, Katie.
Thank you. That's very surprising because you've had some amazing guests after me.
Yeah, and I think it really, that's why these particular shows, these first four shows, before things started getting really guest heavy with more industry-based people, these four, like, and Chris, of course, you too, and all my other guests that weren't industry-based guests, they're my favorite ones to do because it's really what I intended to do with the podcast, was to really have our voices and just tell our stories and just have fun with it. Yeah. So it really stands out to me as what the podcast set out to do. And I also know that we talked about, or I talked to you about, oh, in this podcast, I want to chronologically go through and talk about each song off the album. And that's really fizzled out as well. That hasn't been happening. So it was really nice to listen back and hear what my expectations were from that first one with you to now see where it's at, where it's just more industry-based people that want to come on and just have a chat about their experience. I think it was really nice in those early days to get the questions about the really good stuff done. And I think you, both of you, brought so much to that conversation. That's my take.
but what an achievement over those sessions, though. You know, the people who you were able to contact, and you know, the people who came on and shared their experiences. I mean, it's been amazing, really.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It has. It's been really fun. It's been really exhausting. I'm definitely looking forward to a break before season two. and I've got a couple of people up my sleeve, but it's been fun. So was there anything that stuck out in this show about any surprises, maybe with the songs that the band sing? Let me get my notes. Have you guys got any?
I mean, I was just so impressed with Katie's story, you know, with what you'd done in building your site and how you drew the interest to do it from very early days, you know, and how you were spurred into doing, following your own, professional interests because of your experiences and wanting to create something. I mean, I thought that was amazing. And it did tie in very much with the whole, how Hanson too were building something, you know, and were driven by passion to create something. And I mean, I was an older person at the time. I had a son the same age as Taylor as they were doing that, and my life was in a very different place, but I was teaching young people, and that was one of the things that drew me to Hanson, was seeing people the age of people I taught actually really getting on with something, and listening to your session, Katie, I could imagine all these young people across the world all suddenly being inspired by these musicians to move on in a particular direction with their life, you know. I mean, my exemplars were the monkeys. Well, I was never going to become a monkey, you know. Or I mean, if you go back to that age group, what were young girls going to do following the monkeys? Not much, really, but mess about, and that's all we did. But I mean, I was really impressed. I got a lot of enjoyment out of listening to that, and the whole thing about women that came out of that session too. You know, young women building lives in a different way to how my generation had envisaged building their lives, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that thread of the feminine, like the woman, I try and put into every episode. It doesn't always come out as strongly, especially with like different characters, but I always try and put it in there, and hopes too that people listening, you know, get something from that as well. That they are supported, and you know, we're all doing a really, really good job. But the sheer amount of work, Katie, that goes, I was listening back to it, like it's a lot of work, like yeah. What you're doing. And yeah, I wanted to just thank you for that because it's huge. It's a lot.
And I mean, I think the hardest part for me is finding people who are going to all the shows to make sure that I'm going to have reliable set lists, which like this past tour, the RGB tour, I managed to find someone for every show, which I had never done for a tour before. So I think the word's getting out, you know, more about the website and how much stuff you can find out and how accurate it needs to be. And then, you know, with this Busted tour, I'm not going to any of the shows since, you know, I'm based in the States. So that was freaking me out for a little bit. Like, am I going to find people? But I do have someone for every show. So hopefully I'll have everything by the time the tour ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
You mentioned, like, the RGB tour was the first tour that you've ever had, like every single show you had someone. Do you guys get the feeling that there's like a weird sort of swell? For example, like we know Back to the Island is selling out quicker than it ever has before. Katie's got someone for every show. Do you think people are just getting more dedicated, or do you think that there's more people coming through? Are you experiencing like any higher traffic levels on your website or anything? I just find that there seems to be a quicker sellout of things and a sort of different vibe. There seems to be more people around.
I think with, you know, the past few years being so up in the air with everyone, I think a lot of people are now realizing that they should travel while they have the chance because they don't know, you know, what's going to come in the future. So I think a lot more people are jumping on the opportunity to go to Jamaica, to go to Back to the Island, to see multiple shows and things like that.
I think
certainly the RGB tour and also String Theory, they did draw new people over here. There's a lot of people who have come into the fan base and come big into the fan base just since 2019. And you know, quite enthusiastic people as well, who've brought other people along with them and sort of brought people together. And I think the site Share the Hanson Love you know, that came. I know Andy, who set that up with some other folks. I think that sort of captured a desire after some of the Hansengate stuff to just focus on the positive and to be very, very positive and to be very affirming and sort of bring out the warm with people. And maybe that's allowed people, to make different kind of connections with other people. You know, there are a lot of people who don't go to Hansen things because they don't know one to go with and they don't want to go on their own. And now maybe they've got someone to go with. You know, I don't know. I just wonder, I've seen a bit of that.
Yep, I agree. It's almost like just a perfect storm of different things. And also, like Katie mentioning about like traveling and stuff too, I suppose a lot of the fan base is around my age turning that 40 sort of mark, and I wonder if people are traveling and doing more things because they're having exactly what I'm doing. They're like, oh my god, I actually just feel like I just need to start actually living my life now and just doing all this stuff. Yeah. So all the things you've been putting off, you're doing. You're going to the back to the islands, you know, times.
I know some people, certainly over in the UK, who, you know, they weren't doing much Hansen stuff a while ago because they were studying. They were at university and then they were doing the first few years of their professional careers and they couldn't get away. And then they got married or they got into a serious relationship. Then they had little babies and their babies are now grown up and they can leave the babies with dad or whoever it is and go away and just go, you know, that sort of 40-something woman saying, I'm 40-something, you know.
And I'm going to go marry Taylor Hanson now.
Well, I don't think they will, but, you know, they can still go for the best. But
yes, we can. I think that that's a really, really valid point. And I think that is what's happening. And I think even seeing Hanson Day, I know the hotels are selling out quicker, but I also know that the actual crowd response or the way that the crowd's now having to be not dealt with, like, you know, barricaded and things down in the city is happening bigger and bigger as well. It's just, it's just an interesting thing that I've been noticing and I love it.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought was cool about this, Katie, something that you said in your episode was when you were a reporter, there was no like recording, like you pen and papered it. And I thought that that was really cool as well, because I know now they do their, like, I think they record on their phones, right? Like,
yeah, Isaac records it on his phone now.
Yes.
But before we had to write, and they talk fast. So we had to write everything down and then type it up. You know, once we got home and submit it to the website,
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I love that. So funny. And then I guess it was a written, it wasn't an audio. Like, we're not putting our headphones in. What, you actually sat down and read someone else's report. I think that was a really cool point of difference too. You've both had the experience of being a reporter. Obviously, my journalistic skills on this podcast will now give me the opportunity to be the next reporter for when for when they come here. So all three of us will be sitting down here being a reporter. I'm joking, but, like, I definitely have a list on my phone of questions, so I'm not really
That's the way to do it. Start now, and then if someone else asks it and it gets answered, take it off the list, because when I got that email, I thought I had in my head a whole, like, bunch of questions, but they all just went right out.
Just left. Because you sort of want to balance, like, being neutral but cool but also, like, a little bit funny, and then also have, like, really interesting questions. So I sit and be like, does it hit all these gaps in my imaginary interview? So you guys have done very well with that. Well done. Anything else?
Something that came up in Katie's episode was something about iconic songs, you know, and what was it, thinking about something? What was the song that you talked about? Sorry?
I think thinking of you
thinking about something. What was it?
Favorite thinking song. Yeah,
thinking of because that's right. Sorry.
Yeah, the music. And
you were talking about it being an iconic song, and I was kind of thinking that I wondered whether the iconic Hanson songs are rooted in MON, in the middle of nowhere, or what you would take from other albums as iconic songs, you know, through their catalogue, and to what extent and how they feel iconic, because they all define a different era. They all have a very different vibe. And I just went on an interesting little mind journey with what does it mean for a song from Underneath to be iconic? What does it mean for a song from The Walk to be iconic? What does it mean for a song from Anthem to be iconic? And, you know, it's very much a sense of, obviously, Hanson's journey. But I thought that was quite an interesting thing in terms of the way a song sits with you, you know, and then the way a song continues and goes on, you know. Because Hanson often talk about how their song is, their music is dynamic and fluid and moving. And I think that's a real question that came up for me a lot over all those four sessions, was what does it mean to move forward with Hanson's music? That seemed to come up for me every one, right the way through to, I haven't listened to the, what, have you put out the Christopher Sabek one yet? Not.
Just very recently. Very yeah, quickly.
I haven't listened to that, but the one about, you know, with the music psychologists and stuff, it was there too. And anyway.
Yeah. And I think like it's weirdly so individual, right? Like based on your lens and personal experiences to make something iconic. I think, or would you say like it's iconic based on how far it hit the cohort of listeners? It's interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you would define it. Maybe it only sits with certain songs at certain times. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's different for different people too, because certain songs hit you more emotionally than others.
Yeah.
And someone else might just be like, oh, well, that's just a song. Like, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know with that particular song, for Katie and I, like, the reason it was iconic, that we would use that word, is because it you have an emotional, like, a visceral response to it. And I think if I was thinking about other albums, to be completely honest, I don't know if I have that kind of visceral emotive response to other songs on the albums. I think only because it was such an iconic time that I have that with that particular album. But I don't actually get those kinds of feels putting other albums on. Which is interesting. Do you, Katie?
Yeah, I can't think of any offhand now.
No, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I suppose then now I'm coming back to, like, it's sort of good then that they play that, though they're still playing those songs live. Because sometimes I want them just to not and be like, stop playing. But now, like, I'm thinking about it, it's like, yeah, it was actually, like, you sort of have to, and it's nice to hear them again and be, like, transported back to that. Yeah, it's an interesting point. We had said, just for everyone listening at home, that we were going to sort of try and do 15 minutes for each episode, so we should move on to number two. Episode two was Alyssa Lederer, who was on the Rosie O'Donnell show. And I was listening back to this episode last night and I really, really liked it. My mum actually brought it up with me. I was out for dinner with my mum on the weekend and she was like, ah, like I loved Alyssa's episode. Like I love Alyssa. And listening back to it, I was like, yeah, it's actually a really, really good episode. I loved that Alyssa was so open in her fanness. And I think a lot of us have that, but we definitely be like, no, I'm fine. Like I'm cool. Like, but Alyssa was great in putting down that boundary of, it started off that trajectory of it's okay to actually be really into them and it's okay to have fun with it and laugh and say, you know, yeah, this time they're going to notice me. And I loved her for that. And I loved the permission that she gave everyone listening or moving forward to be okay with that being, you know, a part of your journey. And I also just loved her stories and the way that she was able to articulate that time in her life. It was a real joy for me to listen back to that and have that episode again.
So I did not like her back in the day, and it was 100% rooted in jealousy. Like, totally.
Yeah.
I watched Rosie all the time, so I saw her on the episode and was like, why does she get to do it? Why isn't it me? And just, like, she was public enemy, like, number one for a while in my world. But listening to her episode and getting to find out more about her, I feel like we had a very similar experience with the mean girls at school. And I feel like I almost wish we knew each other then, because even though I was super jealous, we could have banded together and maybe, you know, overcame it a little bit better than we might have done on our own.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really important point too. Something that I've been going over myself is that it's also okay to say when I was 14, I had this particular mindset and I had this particular behavior and attitude. And that's okay because, I mean, never that it's like a bit like to bully and stuff like that, but I was 14. So for Katie to be like openly, you know, yeah, like back in the day, I was so jealous and, you know, I didn't like her and stuff. That's like not Katie today. And I think sometimes we forget in these types of things that the stuff that we did when we were younger doesn't actually resonate or how we feel today. And sometimes, you know, we need to go easy on ourselves and give ourselves allowances for that sort of thing. Because I was the same, like if it were me, you know, I even like Natalie in a weird way, like Natalie Hansen, like I used to be really annoyed at her and just like pick apart like everything that she would do. And I know I'm not the only one. And it is like just rooted in jealousy. The best thing that has come out of that is that like you can see that and that you have that self-awareness and you can come out of it being like, well, that was weird, but that's exactly what it was. And I was growing and learning. And I feel like there can be times where we're still seeing that kind of behavior and there isn't that growth or that understanding behind it. And I think that's where things can get a little bit hairy or curly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
It's an interesting thing that, you know, young girls and women somehow we all have to have a best friend and you know we're all encouraged to be close to each other, but then we're also encouraged to be deeply competitive. You know, we're also encouraged to somehow have to be the prettiest, the cleverest, the thisest, the bestest at this, you know, whether that comes from sometimes it's a family drive, sometimes it's your education, sometimes it's media, it's a mix of all of those. It's also keying into our natural insecurities as human beings. And,
yeah.
You know, and actually boy bands and promotion of bands with handsome young men in it is deliberately put together on some level to make us... To sort of tap into that sort of instinct, to focus on our appearance, to focus on what we buy, to focus where our money goes, to focus on all sorts of things, you know. So yeah. Damn Hansen, they're tied up in this whole negative web of deceit to make women feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you want to post any of this, you know, Megan, when you edit it out. I think you should edit this whole thing out.
No, no, because then we wouldn't have an episode. But, you know, and it is a very raw conversation, and like it's still like embarrassing, you know, to be talking about. But you're right, and it is when you talk about like self insecurities too. A lot of the like it's validating to be special. And if you're chosen, like in the way that Alyssa was chosen to do something that she just happened to be chosen for, she didn't, you know, go out there and, you know, it was her good luck that makes her like a little bit more special than you, right? And when you're 14 and you're looking to be validated and you're having all these like weird feelings and you're not special, you act out, you know, and you're like, I want to be the special one, I want to be chosen. And I still, even now, like Alyssa and I laugh, and a big theme about that episode was, even in her adulthood, she was like, this is the time that they're going to see me, and that they're going to be like, you're the one, Alyssa, you know. And it's still that process of like feeling like you want to feel somehow that you're special and that you made an impact. And it really speaks to, you know, God, this is getting really deep, isn't it? It really speaks to like how you feel about yourself and how we all need to make sure that we do know that we're special and validated regardless
I mean, I've got a comment to make on that from the meet and greet perspective. You know, one thing at the meet and greet, everyone was treated the same by Hansen. You know, if they knew you a bit more than somebody else, they didn't make that obvious. If there was something that they had at the back of their mind connected with somebody, it didn't arise. It was as if they'd almost never met you before, because everybody got the same. If they were going to at any time give some little sort of crumb of something to somebody, it would be in a different way at a different time. You know, not publicly in that. And I admire them for that. You know, that everybody got the same. Everybody was treated the same. And I think I've noticed that with them before. You know, every time you meet them, it's almost like it's the first time you met them. I don't know if you find that, Katie, but I think, you know, they're careful about how they make people feel or not feel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they recognize my face, but like, I've never heard them call anyone by name, whether they know their name or not.
No.
And it's a very even playing field.
Yeah.
Katie, were your experiences in high school rooted in being a Hansen fan, or middle school? Okay. Yeah. So very similar.
Very, very similar. I had one kid tell me once, oh, Katie only likes Hansen because they make a lot of money. And I didn't even realize at 12 or 13 that Hansen made money. Like, it's their job. And like, I guess at some level I knew that, but I was just like, they make music. I wasn't like trying to marry them because I was a gold digger and wanted their money. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked listening to their music.
100%. And that it's rooted in that, like, of course you must only like them because you're a female who's looking to get married and then looking to have a rich husband. Like, it's, and I talked about this in the episode with Tamara Davis. I don't know if you guys have heard it, but it's the same sort of notion or concept of even like doing this podcast. It puts me in a weird firing line with fans, and a lot of people, every time I bring it up, the first response is always like, oh my God, like, are you trying to get them on? Like, what do I want from them, the band, from doing this podcast? And it's just the way that society is, it can't be about me actually wanting to have a creative endeavor or expression or actually learning. It has to be circled back to, well, what am I getting out of it? In terms of the band, not what am I getting out of it personally. And it's the same as that, Katie, you like that permission to just like something because you like something. It always has to be rooted back in to someone having an opinion, whether it's a female thinking that you're trying to like dominate a situation or whatever, be a threat, or a male assuming that you either want to marry them or and I, do you know what? I was just thinking too, it doesn't help that like in every other gag, I'm like, oh, because I'm going to go marry Taylor Heffernan. Like that's, you know, I could probably re-guess that. That does add more fuel to the fire. But I suppose too, like I say in jest, right? I hope people know that, like I actually have a husband. And I'm not actually overly interested, but that it's still that running gag, right? So this episode opened up a lot of that for me and made me really feel like moving forward, I wanted to address that in any which way that I could. So yeah. I'm sorry that you had those experiences too, Katie. Like it's just, yeah, it doesn't make sense to me a lot of the time. What, like, not your story, like why these things happen. Yeah. Why these
yeah. Middle school was brutal.
So what age is middle school for you? Like we don't have middle school, so
11 to 13. Oh. So right when Hanson broke out, they came out when I was 12, so
yeah, it's hard enough, isn't it? Just growing up.
It's such a shame because at that age, it's so lovely to find something that you love that you can enjoy and share, isn't it? But I guess we're all a bit secretive about that at that age as well. And it's quite nice to have little hidden things that are just for us, you know, because we're sort of toying around in our minds with all sorts of explorations, aren't we? And it's nice to have a few little secretive things, but also the opportunity to just enjoy and share it and have fun with it, you know. It's lovely if you can do that, I guess.
Isn't it? And how sad that got taken away. And for me, at that age, that you couldn't have that freedom of expression and joy and, innocence in actually liking something.
You should do an episode about what it feels like to try and do that when you're 43.
Well, we sort of did. We sort of played into that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And what about, you know, what do your friends sitting around doing their knitting say, you know, or when you're 66, like I'm 66 now, going on this tour, my husband said to some friends at the weekend.
Yep. So it doesn't matter what age, right? Like, no. Still, still going on. We should move on because the next episode we'll make it back light. Episode 3 is when we talked about it's Melissa from Tulsa, and we talked about almost like from the 94 to the 97 era. So we went back, and again, I was listening to this episode and it brings me so much joy to talk about. The thing that I love the most is hearing about all the little funny things that they did before M-Bop broke. So I sort of went really overboard in sharing things that I'd found on Facebook about how people that they'd come and played like heaps of schools or pool parties, graduations, people's driveways, that sort of thing. And I think at the time I was really in shock because I didn't realize that they were actually getting out and playing and marketing and entrepreneuring the crap out of themselves when they were that age. So at that time when I was doing that episode, I was really surprised to hear about all of that. Did you guys know that they were doing this?
I mean, I knew they did that Mayfest show, and I knew they had gone to like a couple of schools, but when you were reading that list of like the comments of everywhere they had been around town, I was like, I'm so glad that this is not included on my website because I would never find all of that. There's so many of them.
That's so true. There was so many, and I still would love to know. Actually, I might write that down as one of my reporter questions when I get reporter. I would still love to know how they got those gigs and whether they were like literally cold calling schools and saying, do you want us to come and play? Like, how did it come around that they're playing all these schools?
I heard them say in an interview at some point that actually it was through church. They played first in their church, and someone in their church congregation was a teacher and invited them to come to school. And one invitation from one teacher then kind of led to another invitation by someone else. And I remember Isaac saying something about, you know, while we were playing one show, we were getting a booking for another show. And it just kind of dominoed like that. I think that may have been the way it happened. But I think it started in their church.
Yeah.
Or was part of it anyway.
I'll cross that one off my reporter list.
I'm sorry. Right. I'll just go to bed.
No, don't do that. We want you here. Yeah, that sounds probably about right. My other favorite bit, for some weird reason, was hearing Melissa say that they were rollerblading after Mayfest. I don't know why, but just the thought of them doing a show and then popping on a pair of rollerblades and rollerblading around just gets me.
It's my most favorite part. We don't think they're real people to some degree.
Yes.
And just thinking of them doing something as like normal as rollerblading and just being, you know, regular boys is just weird.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
But what I enjoyed about, I don't know if this was Melissa, but when she was talking about downtown Tulsa and she was saying how, you know, she made a point at one time that downtown Tulsa was not a place to be. And, you know, Katie probably too, you've been to a few Hanson Day events going way back. And I remember the first time I came to Tulsa was 2007. And I just went on a little bit, and it was just empty parking lots, empty warehouses, everything overgrown, tumbleweeds kind of blowing down the roadways. And that's how it felt. And how it has changed. I know a lot of investment's been put in deliberately, but when she also said how she felt Hanson and their business was at the heart of that, I thought that you can just feel that be the case. And how different that whole area is. And, you know, you think about them going to Mayfest rollerblading and like in the walk, in the artwork for the walk, or was it, I think it's the walk, a lot of photographs are just round the block from where 3CG Records, but they were empty streets and, you know, yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say really, but I found that really interesting about Melissa's piece. You know, connecting how they grew up there and did these things there and now have sort of really embedded themselves in the place, and it's changed totally. Yeah. And how they're there for the long haul, you know.
Yeah. And that they've kept that their home, like Tulsa is home, and that they've really put a lot of effort back into that, back into Tulsa. Interesting you talk about the photos changing, like from whatever album to
I think
now,
it was,
and see that difference. That's cool.
Yeah, I think I remember them saying about when they did the walk, and you know, they was really the first, not the first album truly independent, but it was the album where they really embraced their independence, both in every respect of making this record, how they wanted to, and that it was deeply rooted in Tulsa. You know, so the pictures of them walking along the riverbed, and then, you know, pictures just around the back of their offices, and then pictures taken from a street just a block away and standing on the rooftop of somewhere in Tulsa.
Me too. I love it. That was a good point, a really good point that Melissa made as well. So I thought, overall this episode was just really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked how she mentioned that the early fan club, they would call you on the phone. Like, I don't know how I would have handled that as like a 11-year-old. If they called me up and they were like, oh, hey, we're playing a show on Friday, you should come.
Yeah, I know. I still can't get my head around it either. And that the bit where like Walker delivered like a cassette to the person's house, like hand delivered it to the house. Right.
What?
It's just the best. And yeah, I really just didn't have any idea of that movement back then. And I think that's been one of my most favorite things because it does humanize them. You're right, Katie. Like it does humanize them and also makes me feel like weirdly proud. Like good on you. Good on you for being little kids and actually really seeing this thing through.
Right. Putting in the effort.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a strange journey for them really to go from, you know, to go so quickly from just being ordinary people to being seen as such not ordinary people, and then to have to stay in that world all this time. I mean, I was thinking that at the meet and greet the other day, you know, the fact that they understand that when people meet them, they become completely unintelligible still doesn't help them because they just want to meet ordinary people who can shake their hand and look them in the eye and go, thank you, it's nice to see you. Yet all these people can't do it no matter how much they try to prepare to do it. And they must, as ordinary people, be standing there thinking, well, I think they're beyond thinking anything. They just know what happens now. You know, but what that must feel like for them, you know, this space between the ordinary and the celebrity, which, but yet they're such humble celebrities. You know, they're celebrities, but they're not celebrities, are they? You know, they're ordinary people in a celebrity suit.
Should we wrap it up with episode 4, which is Dr. JD. Dr. JD and her understanding of Mbop as a song, and I guess like compartments of a song and music, and then her husband was there as well, which I was super stoked about, who was a music psychologist. And this is where I started to really try and get more information and go into more depth about the psychology of a fan and a fandom at large. But we can get to that because Dr. JD was amazing and she totally knows what she's talking about. And I loved her for that. I loved the way she was able to break it down. I loved the way she pulled out her little keyboard and spoke about, you know, making little earworms and things and what makes a song popular and what makes a song stick in people's minds. I thought she was brilliant.
Complex thing, isn't it? You know, when you hear us talk about that and you say something about a hook every 7 seconds, you know, I thought, how do you do that? You know, and you know that there are resident songwriters who sit every day in Nashville writing song after song after song after song looking for to be able to capture that, and then and then you think those kids did it at that age, they stumbled into it somehow, you know, because their natural tendency, their natural talent to harmony, their natural appreciation of certain sounds and, you know, genres of music took them in that direction, and they kind of put this song together, created this little gem, you know.
Do you guys feel like after listening to some of these episodes more like just for their artistry or the how actually clever they are, like, but like next level, seriously clever to
there's some stuff that I'd never really thought about before. Like Mbop's a good song. I know it's a catchy song. It caught my attention, obviously, and, you know, I love it, but I never really think of it that in depth or to break it apart and see, like, how, you know, all the inner workings and how much they kind of either consciously or unconsciously like stumbled upon to write such a catchy song. Like, I never really thought of that before.
Same.
Isn't it kind of like kids that learn to play the piano and can play Mozart at the age of six? You know, that comes from some kind of natural gift, doesn't it? And if all three of them, there's some kind of natural gift and synchronicity, and that's sort of tenderly kind of nurtured by their environment, their mum, their dad, the poetry coming from their dad, the musical expertise coming from their mum, and they're confident to sit with it, you know, and there's little bits of inspiration popping around in whose ever head.
Yeah,
doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it's not. And I think that that's something that I didn't recognize or realize at how I think gifted they were, and almost like in a way like chosen for this role. It's not normal. And even people that like set out to want to do it, they have something that other people don't have, like an X factor or whatever. And I don't think I really ever realized that before either. And that also coupled with hard work and drive. But I'm overall surprised at what they were able to do, you know, in all honesty. And I think because we do feel like in some weird way that we sort of know them now and they're that little bit more accessible, I had forgotten the level that they got to and how much people were involved in the whole machine that whole thing was. And I don't know if that still exists. And, you know, are they still having all the, like in the Christopher Sebeck one, he said that there was like 50 people that they used to travel with. And I often wonder now, like, how many people do they now have on their books, like on their team, you know? Is it that a big of a machine as it was when Mbop was happening?
I doubt it. I doubt that. That's partly because they're not with a label. You know, there's lots of people that go with the label, aren't there? And there's lots of people that go with the kind of touring you can do if you're with a label. You know,
yeah.
I've noticed with this Busted tour, it's immense. It's immense. The number of people involved in it is huge. You know, because they're with a big label, they can do this. But, I mean, on their tour bus, on an ordinary tour, what's that, about 12, 15 people? When you take the tech guy that travels and a manager and, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, they only have one bus now, so it can't be quite as massive as it was. Mm.
They do interesting, like, because I just assume that they use the tech guy like in-house, like whoever does tech for that particular venue, they use it. But at the RGB show here in Melbourne, Australia, their tech guy was traveling with them, and that surprised me. He was American, from I think even from Oklahoma, but they must have particular staff that they keep on to do some of their shows. That's weird. I'll ask it in my reporter question. So the. The other part of this episode was Dr. JD's husband coming in to talk to us a little bit about connecting with music and how that sort of fuses our brains and memories and things like that, which was really important for me to have on from the get-go. I wanted so badly. You would not believe how many psychologists I cold called, being like, "Hi, I'm doing a podcast and it's about Hanson. And a really big element that I want to talk about and need to talk about is the connection that we have with them still to this day and why, you know, all the things." It was really hard to get anyone on. So when I reached out to him, and I've forgotten his name, and isn't that terrible? I don't have it in my notes. To Tim about being on the on this episode, and he said no, like, you know, it's probably not my thing, but he is someone that would be really good, and that was Dr. JD. And I didn't know that they were married, and so then she came on, and then he was there, and I was like, oh my god, like, you guys, like, that is so funny. So I was really stoked that he was able to give that little bit of input, because I do think that it's a really important piece and speaks back to what I originally set out to do in the podcast, which wasn't so much those industry people and having industry people talk about their experiences. It's just something that ended up happening, and the more people that I had on would then call other people to come on, and it was just this sort of snowball effect of people in my inbox being like, oh, I want to come on and talk about, you know, because it was like such an amazing time and people want to talk about that, and of course. But I like the organic authenticness of having topics and stories that are based on other things outside of it. So this episode was really important and special to me in that way. I just wanted to put that out there.
I enjoyed it, and I thought it was really interesting because it sort of connected to something that's been quite important to me in the last couple of years in my own thinking, and that is the role that memory plays in terms of sort of holding you back, that, you know, you can become sort of embedded in something that you can't let go because of memory being all important. But actually somehow letting go of those expectations that go along with memory can sort of release an energy to go into somewhere new. And I mean, I'm interested that Hanson, especially Taylor, will talk, well, all of them in different ways will talk about moving on with their music, you know, about sort of being brave and courageous in sort of being open to move on. And sometimes, you know, you can, and sometimes you can't. And what, where we might go, the more we're able to do that, you know. You know, you hear about people who scream at artists in a concert saying, play this, why won't you play this? You know, like, there's famous stories with artists like Bob Dylan and people like that, you know, of their audience not letting them move on. And I just think it's an interesting idea that we could be, I don't know, much more. Yeah, I'm trying to say something that's too difficult for me to formalise at 11 o'clock at night. But, you know, having the courage really to let go of the past and move forward into the future with something like music, you know? I mean, they're always gonna have the same characteristics in some ways, but looking forward to something new, you know.
Yeah. I found the comparing of the male sports fan versus the female fangirl and the psychology of that to be really interesting. I'm a baseball fan, so I'm in a lot of groups with grown men who act like toddlers, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, the tantrums that they will throw over sports-related things that in the grand scheme of things do not matter are worse than any sort of outburst or tantrum I've ever seen in my life from a girl who is a fangirl. But yet somehow that's okay. But the girls who are screaming their heads off for these band guys are a problem. Like, I don't get it.
No, same. And that's, I mean, can we do it on this podcast? But I want to try and break that down because it's just exactly what it is. And even like as you were talking, I'm imagining this group of guys, right, that you're talking about, and I'm seeing them, and they've just won their baseball game, and then they go out, like say it's the final, so they're not playing anymore. And this happens here in Australia a lot because we're also very sports heavy. Oh, well, everyone is. The UK too, with your football, we call it soccer, but whatever. There's this notion that after the boys play their finals games, they go out on the town, or like, and they get blind drunk and they wear ridiculous outfits, like, you know, underwear or something, and they go around the town, like famous, you know, footy players or whatever. They're allowed to do whatever they want, like vomit in the street, probably like pee in the street, like it just doesn't matter, and that's acceptable. And everyone's like, oh, like how funny how funny that they do that. And then you have a girl who's at a Hanson show who's like drunk too much, like I see it almost every show I go to, all that, and like they're vomiting or something, you know. And people, I've seen people just walk over them and be like, oh my God, like, oh, she's so embarrassing, like she's so gross, like all this sort of stuff. And it's like, oh my gosh, how, you just jogged a memory of actually when I saw that happen at a Hanson show. And I'm probably partially to blame as well. Like I never stopped and picked her up or asked if she was okay, you know, I don't know. So it's funny that representation of what's acceptable in a male is, and it's very similar to behavior that's happening, that we see happening or can see happening, but one's totally acceptable and one's totally not. So there's so much at play here, and I think Hanson really are such a great example of that social landscape and how it's all worked over time as well. Anyway, I digress.
Something that went through my mind there was that, you know, talking about the conditioning that we pick up from very early on, you know, about what is acceptable, and that keys into those insecurities we talked about earlier on, that actually there's something inside women that's quite happy to diss on other women, you know, something in there, something competitive and something, you know, a little bit insecure. We don't mind too much, you know, being judgmental. Whereas with a man, it's different because, you know, somehow we've got to appeal to men. There's got to be a bigger space allowed out there for men to be. And there's not as many of them as well. And there's more of us in vying for. And that made me think of something to do with Hanson when we were talking about, you know, their achievements, that they were homeschooled. They didn't go to school. They didn't have the conditioning we have in education early on. They had a different environment in which to grow, where their talent could somehow grow without the kind of conditioning that we all had at school. Certainly I did, you know, no, you can't sing, or you're not an artist, or you can't do that. You've got to do this instead. You've got to do that instead. Somehow they grew in a different kind of soil to us, or to me. Yeah, anyway. They had
no one to come along and stomp on them when they said, this is what we want to do. Their parents were like, oh, okay. And nurtured that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something I found interesting in it, because I was just about to say, and they probably weren't bullied in school because they didn't have any. But then I am thinking back to an interview that I listened to Taylor do. Oh, it was with Uncle, with Alexis someone.
I remember this.
Yeah, so he did that interview with her, and actually I remember him saying that he was bullied by men. Well, I don't know, like I'm not assuming they were grown men, they'd be grown men now, but by males, that, you know, he definitely had that. And actually I remember in Melbourne, their first show that they did here in like 2004, I don't know if I've spoken about this before, but there was a group of boys waiting for them after the show. So it was all us girls, like, you know, around the car and around the van and like trying to like grab onto them. And there was a group of boys that knew that they were going to be there and had all these like water bombs and like Coke bottles and stuff. And they went up to the top of the buildings and just started dropping them and throwing things at them. And at the time, like, again, like it was sort of normalized for me because I was used to that sort of reaction to that particular band, and I'm sure that they were too. There's nothing normal about that. There's nothing okay about that. But at that time, because bullying was so rife to do with Hanson, and I suppose whether you were a male or female, you know, I look back on that and think, oh my gosh, that I think that they did have a lot of those experiences. Mm-hmm. That would be very different to being a male as you were with a female. Do you know what I mean? And he spoke that a lot of people, especially because he's aware that he's popular with the female cohort and that that rubs men up the wrong way. And that he, I've just heard.
Is that your kids?
Skateboard. Yeah. that they definitely had a lot of that. So that's a really interesting experience that I might write down as a reporting question. Because I didn't know that they had an awareness of that, and like how silly of me to not. Anyway, I've talked a long time. I'll pass the mic before we wrap it up. Anything else?
No. I mean, I really enjoyed listening to those first four episodes again. I got a lot of sense of real positivity out of it and an enormous joy at everyone's enthusiasm, you know, and a real taken back to those first encounters with something that so impacts you so much, has such an impression on you. I mean, for me, that wasn't middle of nowhere. For me, that was this time around. I have that same sense when I put that album on and hear certain tracks of that play. I go back to, you know, being 43, lying in bed with my headphones on and having it on continuous replay so that I knew every place in that album where Taylor breathed. I can tell you in what song he takes a breath after which word, because when you're listening to it at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and you're half asleep and you hear, you know, I mean, that's what the album was with me for me and those moments. But I got such joy from listening to everybody's experiences. I thought it was lovely.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here and thanks for doing this with me and coming along on the journey. It's so appreciated and I love the connections that we've built. So thank you.
You've done an incredible job, Megan, really. It's been wonderful. I think you should be very proud of yourself. You know, really very pleased with what you've achieved. Honestly, I think it's fabulous.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah,
you've been doing a great job. You've been having great guests, great questions, great conversation. I look forward to listening every week. It's great.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Honestly, thank you. I'll get emotional.
I'll let you know which albums you really need to seriously interview me on. You know, whichever album next you take, keep me in because, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And this is, you know, I've always said this is a pod for all of us. And any input that anyone ever wants to give, like, I'm here for it. Like, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, thank you, guys. Go rest, sleep, enjoy your night, and I'll be in touch with all the intricacies after.
Take care. Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye. Bye.